I want to thank Rabbi Kelman, who doubles as my uncle, for asking me to speak this afternoon. I titled the shiur "How Humility Destroyed the Temple." I should have changed it. I should have titled it "How Anava Destroyed the Temple," and you'll see why I want to make that change. What I want to do is I want to analyze the story that I'm sure many of you are familiar with, that appears twice, actually, in our rabbinic literature. It appears once in the Gemara Talmud Bavli Masechet Gittin, and it appears again in the Midrash Eicha Rabbah. The story that led up to describing the events leading up to the destruction of the temple, destruction of the Beit HaMikdash, very often referred to as the story of Kamsa and Bar Kamsa. But I want to focus specifically on one person's role in the story. And I want to focus specifically on the role of Rav Zecharia ben Avkulas. I think his role in the story might often be overlooked, but I think it's quite significant, and I hope there's a lot we can learn from seeing his role in the whole episode. So what I want to do is first I want to read through the source in the Gemara, in Masechet Gittin, Daf Nun Hey Amud Bet until Nun Vav Amud Aleph. I want to read through the source there, analyze the role that Rav Zecharia ben Avkulas plays in that story. And then afterwards, I want to read through the version in Eicha Rabbah, because it's a slightly different version, and he plays a different role, and analyze his role in that story as well, and hopefully come out with some lessons we can learn about really what went wrong in the story. So we'll begin, if everyone has a source sheet, with source number one. There's an English translation if you want to follow in the English. I'm going to read in the Hebrew, and I'll translate as I go along. Akamtza ubar kamtza charuv Yerushalayim. Because of Kamtza and Bar Kamtza, Yerushalayim was destroyed. Dehahu gavra derachme kamtza, ubaal debave bar kamtza, avad sudata. That there was a man who was friendly with Kamtza, his enemy was Bar Kamtza, and he made a lavish party. Amar le lishame, he tells his servant, the man throwing the party, the unnamed man, we don't know who he is, we don't know what his name is. He tells his servant, Zil aiti le kamtza, go invite my friend, go invite Kamtza to my party. What happens? Azal aiti le bar kamtza. The man goes and seemingly accidentally invites bar kamtza. Ata, ashkechei dehava yativ. So the man throwing the party comes and sees that Bar Kamtza is sitting at his table, sitting at the party. Amar lei, so the man throwing the party remarks, Michtei hahu gavra bal debava dehahu gavrahu, mai baitacha. It's funny how he seems to be speaking in the third person almost. He says, this person here is an enemy of this person, referring to himself and Bar Kamtza. What are you doing here? What are you doing at my party? Kumpok, get out of here. Amar le, hoil ve'atai shavkan v'yehidna l'cha d'mei ma de'achilna v'shatina. He says, you know what? Since I'm already here, please let me stay, and I'll compensate you. I'll pay you back for the amount that I ate and I drank. Amar le, look, no. Amar le, yehidna l'cha d'mei palga d'sudatech. I'm going to pay you half of the worth, however much it costs you to the party, I'll give you half the amount. Please let me stay at the party. Amar lei, lo, no. Amar lei, yahivna lecha demei kula sudatich. I will pay you for the whole party. Do not embarrass me. Please do not throw me out. And amar lei, lo, no. And then he had enough already. Nakta biyade, so the man throwing the party grabbed Bar Kamtza by the arm. V'ukme v'afke, threw him out of the party. This story very often is used, I think, as the example when we talk about Sinat Chinam, as the baseless hatred that existed among the Jewish people. You can see why this is the story that's quoted. Amar, but now once Bar Kamta is kicked out, the story continues. Hoyil v'havu yatzvi rabbanan v'lo machube, since he saw all the leaders of the generation who were there. It wasn't just the wealthy, of the generation, the wealthy people, Yerushalayim, who were sitting there. It was also the leaders, the sages of the people. And since they all witnessed the account, they all witnessed the embarrassment of Bar Kamta, how he was thrown out of the party, below Machube, and they didn't protest, they didn't do anything, they sat still. Shma mina kanicha lehu. He believed, you know what, it must be that they agree. They agree with everything that this host just did. And it's obviously upset Bar Kamta even more. So what's his plan? Says, Izel Ichel Behu Kortza Vemalka. I'm going to go almost tattletale on them. I'm going to go to the authorities, go to the Roman government, and get these people in trouble. Azal, he went. Amar Leila Kesar, he tells the leader, Mardubach Yehudai, the Jewish people have rebelled against you. Amar Lei, Miyamar. Says, who said so? Why should I believe you? Who said they rebelled? Amar Lei. So he tells him, Shadar Luhu Kurbana. Why don't you send a sacrifice to the Jewish people? And Chazit Imikarvin Lei. And go see if they're going to offer this sacrifice, this animal that you give you, in the temple. So Azal, so the leader, the problem is he gave the animal to Bar Kamta as the messenger to give over to the temple. So Shadar Biyade Egla Tiota Bahade Dekaati Shadar Be Muma Beniv Sfataim. So what he do? He give the animal over to Bar Kamta, give this animal to the temple so it'll be sacrificed. And what Bar Kamta did is he made a slight blemish in the animal. And it's the Gemara gives two opinions. Either he made a blemish in the eye, he made a blemish on the lip. Either way, whatever blemish he made, it was something for which the foreign government, for the Romans, they would still consider the animal to be a perfect animal. No reason why it shouldn't be offered in the temple. But according to the Jewish tradition, having that little nick on the lip or on the mouth nullifies it. It's no longer permitted to offer this animal as a sacrifice. So that's what they do. So now I'm up to the bolded part of section number one. So Savur Rabbanan Likrove Mishum Shlom Malchut. So what happens? The Kohanim, they get this animal, they see that it has a slight blemish, and they say, you know what? I still think we're going to offer this animal in the temple. Why? Because Shalom Malchut, I want to ensure that there's peace with the government. Right? You can see how the relations seem to be pretty good with the government, considering when Bar Kamta started this conversation, said they rebelled against you. The leader said, who said they rebelled against me? I don't believe you that they rebelled. So they seem to be on good terms, and the Jewish people wanted to continue to be on those good terms. So they wanted to offer it. So here's what I want to focus. Amar lehu Rabbi Zechariah ben Avkulas. Rabbi Zechariah ben Avkulas gets up. Yomru, bale mumin kravin legame mizbeach. So what Rabbi Zechariah ben Avkulas gets up and says, absolutely not. We cannot offer this korban in the temple. What is the reason? Because other people who are going to hear about this, they're going to say, we offer animals with blemishes in our temple. It's forbidden to offer an animal with a blemish, but people are going to believe that it's now permitted to do so if we offer this animal. So then they decide to go to plan B. What's plan B? Sabur lemikdale delolizel velema. Then they decided, you know what? Maybe we should go ahead. Maybe let's kill Bar Kamta. Because if we kill Bar Kamta, the news won't get back. The Roman government won't know if we offered this animal as a sacrifice, and therefore we won't get in trouble. Again, Rabbi Zechariah interjects, Amar lehu Rabbi Zechariah, Yomru matil mum bekochi miharig. You know what people are going to think? People are going to think, if you make a slight blemish in an animal, like Bar Kamta did, the punishment is a death penalty. So Amar Rabbi Yochanan, maybe the most shocking line in the whole Gemara, Rabbi Yochanan states, Anva tanuto shel Rabbi Zechariah ben Avkulas, the Anava, we'll leave it with Anava and we'll get back to that very soon. The Anava of Rabbi Zechariah ben Avkulas, Hechriva et Beitenu, is what? Destroyed the Beit HaMikdash. The Sarfat Hechaleinu is responsible for, again, burning the temple. The Higlitanu mei artzenu, and is what caused us to be exiled from our land. So again, a lot to talk about on this story specifically. Again, let's try to focus on the latter part, dealing with Rabbi Zechariah ben Avkulas. First of all, who is Rabbi Zechariah ben Avkulas? Anybody here know where else he appears in Ch'as? It's not a trick question. There's one place where he appears in Ch'as. Besides the story, there's only one other place, and we're going to see that source at the end. He appears in one other place, and that is, he appears in the Gemara Masechet Shabbat, which also appears in the Tosefta there. With regards to an argument with respect to the laws of Muktzah, moving objects which have no purpose on Shabbos. Doesn't seem to be very important, and here he's seriously placed. So who is Rabbi Zechariah ben Avkulas? We don't know very much about him. We know, obviously, because he's living in this time period, so he's a Tana who lived towards the end of the destruction of the second Beit HaMikdash. We know, and that's about it. Everything else we know about him really comes from the story that we see here. But I want to go back now. So it's Rabbi Zechariah ben Avkulas. What happens is, again, they want to somehow find some sort of compromise to make sure the Roman government doesn't get upset. Rabbi Zechariah ben Avkulas twice gets up and says, no, we can't compromise on our values. And then Rabbi Yochanan, which I think is very shocking, again, blames, because of the anava of Rabbi Zechariah ben Avkulas, attributes the destruction to him. So just based on this line, I think there's a big contrast from how the story begins and how the story ends. We began the story in the Gemara, Akamtza ubar kamtza charv Yerushalayim. We blame the destruction on kamtza and bar kamtza. And I don't know if Rabbi Yochanan is arguing or as much as adding another layer, he's saying, don't only blame it on kamtza and bar kamtza, let's blame it on Rabbi Zechariah ben Avkulas as well. He too is very much responsible for the destruction of the temple. So now get back to, why am I struggling with the word anava? If I'd ask you, what does the word anava mean, what would most of you say? Humble, humility. Exactly. And that's why I titled this year, How Humility Destroyed the Temple. However, the difficulty in that is, if you look at this story, does Rabbi Zechariah ben Avkulas seem to be humble? Right, why not? Right, if anything, he would seem to be anything but humble. It seems to be him against everybody else. Somehow, he wins the battle. So it seems to be that he, even though we don't see him anywhere in the Gemara, we don't see him come up with any other halakhic rulings, he seems to be important enough that his opinion is taken seriously to seemingly outweigh everybody else, the other Rabbanan who are there. But exactly, doesn't seem to be very humble in this story at all. And in fact, the commentators on the Gemara, therefore, are so troubled with it, that Rashi, for example, I didn't quote it on here, he interprets anava not as humility. Because, again, it doesn't seem to be an act of humility what's going on here. And he interprets anava here as savlanuto. Savlanut is patience. And the way he wants to interpret the Gemara then, it's, the patience of Rabbi Zechariah ben Avkulas is what caused the destruction of the temple. And what he means is that he was patient, that he was willing to deal almost with Bar Kamsa's antics. That he wasn't willing to go ahead and to offer the sacrifice, even though it had the blemish. And he wasn't offering to kill Bar Kamsa. He said, let's just let him deal. Let Bar Kamsa deal with whatever he needs to deal with. We'll put up with him. It won't be a big deal. And as Rabbi Yochanan seems to, and as we see the continuation of the story, certainly was a big deal. So just to look, so what is it? Again, Rabbi Yochanan is putting the blame on Rabbi Zechariah ben Avkulas. So what did he do that is so bad? Again, if you look at the story, he's trying to follow halacha, trying to remain true to what should be, and therefore, even though maybe they could have suggested to offer the sacrifice because of the blemish, he says, no, we have to be strict to the law. The law says no blemish. We're not going to allow it. And then with killing, that's a bit of a separate issue because when they suggest to kill Bar Kamsa, so certainly murder is a prohibition, and it seems to be a noble act, the fact that he doesn't want to kill Bar Kamsa. However, we have a principle in Jewish law of somebody who is a moser, somebody who's going to, again, paddle on you and is going to really put your life in danger, maybe it would have been permitted to kill him. But let's leave that aside. But what really was the issue? What did Rabbi Zechariah ben Apkulas do that was so wrong, that was so terrible, that we're going to attribute the destruction of the temple to his actions? So I think one first flaw that I want to suggest is that what he seems to be doing is that he's treating the temple, he's treating the Beit HaMikdash with tremendous respect. Again, doesn't want to compromise on the values, but at the expense of any other considerations. And it reminded me of source number 2, the story in the Gemara in Masechet Yoma. And the story there, the discussion there, is about the Trumat Hadeshen, the first service that is performed in the temple every morning, is that one of the Kohanim would go and remove some of the ashes from the altar. And who was the Kohen? Who was the one who was initially able to perform this type of service? So the Gemara explains that it was a race, that the Kohanim would race up, and whoever was first would get the honor of removing the ashes. And as we'll see, due to the story that we're going to read, they later changed it, no longer going to be a race, but it's going to be a lottery. So what's the story? Tanu Rabbanan. Source number 2, again, you can follow along the English, I'll read it in the Hebrew. Ma'aseh b'shnei kohanim. There's a story with two kohanim. Shehayu shnehem shavin v'ratzin ve'olin bakevesh. So there were two kohanim. They were running up the ramp of the altar, and they were tied. It was a close race to see who was going to win the race to perform this type of service. One of the two came within 4 amot, say 6 feet, came pretty close to where the other one was. Natal sakin v'takalo bilibo. He took out a knife, stabbed the other Kohen, and killed him. Amar Rabbi Tzadok al malo ta'ulam v'amar. Rabbi Tzadok got up on the steps near the temple and stated, Achenu Beit Yisrael Shimu. My brethren, the Jewish people, listen. Harehu Omer. The verse describes, Ki imatze chalal ba'adama, v'yatzu zikenecha v'shotecha. He's describing the ritual of the Egla Arufa. The ritual of the Egla Arufa is if a dead body is found in between two cities and is unclear who was responsible for the death of this man, the leaders of the two cities come out, they perform a ritual with the cow, they kill the cow, and both leaders of both cities declare their innocence in the story. So Rabbi Tzadok gets up here and he says, my brethren, the Jewish people, quotes the pasuk, if you find a dead man, if you die a dead body on the ground, Anu amila havi egla arufa. Who is responsible to bring the egla arufa? Al ha'ir or al ha'azarot? Is the city of Jerusalem, are the inhabitants of the city of Jerusalem responsible? Or is it the azarot? Or is it maybe the kohanim who reside inside the temple, are they responsible to bring the egla arufa? Ga'u kol ha'ambifia, and the whole nation cries. The Gemara later on explains that obviously this isn't meant as a halachic statement, because in this case there is no egla arufa. We know exactly who was responsible for the murder. The Gemara says that he used it as a way to cause the people to cry, which we see they all did at the end. But getting back to the end of the story, Ba'aviv shel tinok, the father of the one who was stabbed, comes. Umatzuk shehum b'farper. He saw his son, and his son was in convulsions. He had not yet died. He was about to die. Amar, Harehu kaparatchem. He shall be an atonement for all of you. The adai benim mefarper, the lo nit me'asakin. He hasn't died yet. And you know what that means? If he hasn't died, that the knife that was taken to stab him is not yet ritually impure. So if we take out this knife before he dies, we wouldn't have to put this, we wouldn't have to take this knife and put it in, dip it, immerse it in the mikvah in order to become pure. And the Gemara continues, Lilamedcha, this teaches you, Shekasha aleihem tarat kelim yoter mishfichu damim. They were more concerned about the ritual purity or impurity of the utensils in the Beit HaMikdash, in the temple. They're more concerned about that than the prohibition of murder. And then quotes a pasuk here at the end describing Menashe, the evil king of Menashe, who killed many people in the city of Yerushalayim. And I think if we take this story, I think this very much relates to, I think it's very relevant to the story of Rabbi Zechariah ben of Kulas. In this story, there are obviously two major flaws. First of all, the one who was so concerned, who so much desired to take part in the service that he was willing to kill his fellow Kohen just so that he could be the one to perform the act of Trumat Hadeshen. And then the father, when the father sees his own son dying, what's his reaction? Not crying about his son. He says, you know what? If we take out this knife, we can make sure that it's not ritually impure. And these are both based on the same idea. The idea that they are treating the Beit HaMikdash, they are treating the service in the Beit HaMikdash, they are treating the utensils in the Beit HaMikdash with more importance than human life. And I think that's maybe one flaw we can see where Rabbi Zechariah ben Avkulas did. It's true, he wanted to remain true, and he wanted to make sure that there were no compromises, that the service in the Beit HaMikdash would remain exactly the way it should be. But when he did that, he was really putting that value above any value of treating your fellow man. And by putting that on more, you know, on the higher level, without recognizing how it might affect, the detrimental effects that it might have on his fellow men, and here the whole city of the whole Jewish people, that's why Rabbi Yochanan blames Rabbi Zechariah ben Avkulas with the destruction of the Beit HaMikdash. That could be one flaw. A related, but I think another element that we can see, the flaw of Rabbi Zechariah ben Avkulas, I think is highlighted in source number 3 on your sheet. And I brought from here a passage from the Mesilat Yesharim. I'll read it. I think he explains it very nicely, and he explicitly brings down, includes our case, our Gemara. Vihine, in source number 3, Masha tzarich lahavinhu, ki ein ladun divrei chasidut al marein harishon. You should know that you can't judge somebody's actions. You can't look at somebody's actions immediately and say those actions are chasidut. Those are very pious actions, all based on your initial thought. Ela tzarich le'ayein ulehit ponein. Rather, you must look into the matter. Ad heichan todot hamaseh magiyot. What are the consequences of this action? You know, are they going to stop whatever the action is performed right here, that's it? Or are there going to be further consequences to your action? Kilifamim hama'aseh be'atzmo yiratov. Very often, it seems to be a noble act. Again, it seems to be a very humble act. He's trying to make sure not to compromise on the values of the Beit HaMikdash. Ulefisha ha'toldot ra'ot. But if the eventual consequences are going to turn out bad, yitchayev lahanicho, then it's forbidden, right? He is responsible, he's obligated, and he would be really obligated to make sure not to do that act. Velu ya'aseh oto, and if he does this action, yeh chotei velo chasid. He's a sinner. He's not pious, he's a sinner. Hinei ma'aseh gedalya ben achikam galui le'inenu, and he quotes the story of Gedalia ben Achikam. I think Rabbi Tershiner spoke about Gedalia, so if anyone was here might know the story, but we'll review it anyways. Shemipnei rov chasiduto shelo ladun et Yishmael lekaf chova. Gedalia, after the destruction of the first temple, Gedalia was put in charge of all the Jewish people who remained in the land of Israel. And one day, he received word that there was somebody plotting to kill him. And Gedalia pretty much threw him out and said, I can't believe you. You're speaking Lashon Hara. You're speaking nonsense. I refuse to believe what you're saying. And eventually the person who, again, Gedalia was told Ishmael was going to kill him. He eventually was killed by him. And really, once Gedalia was killed, all the inhabitants of who remained inside the land of Israel after destruction fled to Egypt, fled to other places. So that's what he explains here. You know, again, he thought it was so pious. He thought it would be so pious. How can I possibly believe what they're saying about Yishmael? How can I possibly believe that he wants to kill me? And therefore, Amar li Yochanan ben Kerach, he stated, Sheker ta dover Yishmael. You're speaking falsehood. You are lying. I don't believe you. Uma garam. What happened? What are the consequences? Garam shemetu. It caused not only that Gedalia died, v'nifrizu Yisrael, the Jewish people scattered all outside the land, v'kava gachalatam hanishara, and the coal, the little bit of light that was left, that remained after destruction, was now extinguished. Uchvar yiches hakatu v'harigat anashim asher nehergu, elu ki'ilu haragamhu. And it's the Gemara, and he says, goes so far as that not only was Gedalia responsible for his own death, the Gemara attributes the death of all the people due to this story to Gedalia. And it quotes here, B'ma'aram quotes the Gemara in Nida, al ha-pasuk, ekol pigrei ha-anashim, all of the dead body, the carcasses, asher hika, or huka biyad Gedalia, who were smitten by Gedalia. The Gemara says Gedalia is the one responsible. Obviously, he wasn't the one who killed any of these other people. But because of his actions, because he refused to believe the Lashon Hara about Yishmael, and because that led to Gedalia being killed, other people being killed, and the Jewish people fleeing the land of Israel, they attribute the actions to Gedalia. And even Gedalia, who obviously we view as a tzaddik, we have a fast, again, Tzom Gedalia, seems to commemorate his death. Here, the Mesilat Yesharim is really being harsh and saying we can't treat him as a chassid. His actions, his last actions here, will treat again. I wouldn't want to go as far as to call him a chotei, a sinner, but that's how the Mesilat Yesharim initiated it. He said if somebody refuses to look at the future consequence of his action, he's not a chassid, he's a chotei. And here now he quotes our story as well. V'habayit hasheni gamhu charev aydei chassidut kazeh. And so too, the destruction of the second temple can also be attributed to this pious act, Ashalonishkal b'mishkal tzedek, where they didn't take the proper calculations into account. B'maaseh debar kamtza, referring to the story of Bar Kamtza. Amru, Savur Rabbanan likrovek, again, quoting the Gemara that we just saw. The Rabbanan, the rabbis thought, you know what would be a great idea? Let's offer the sacrifice and let's make sure to keep our peace with the Jewish, with the Roman government. Amar le Rabbi Zechariah ben Akulas, again, Yom Rubali Mumin craving legame mizbeach. Zechariah ben Akulas said, no, people are going to believe that it's permitted to offer an animal to blemish. Sabur le Mikdale, again, they wanted to kill Bar Kamtza. Amar le Rabbi Zechariah ben Akulas, Yom Rumatil Mum bekochi mihareg. Again, people are going to believe that if you put a blemish on an animal, you deserve the death penalty. Ben kach u ben kach. Halachot Rashav Yehoshin et Yisrael. Therefore, Bar Kamtza went, spoke Lashon Hara about the Jewish people. Ba Kesar v'Hechriv Yerushalayim, and they came and destroyed Yerushalayim. V'hu Masha Amar Rabbi Yochanan Alzeh, and this is what Rabbi Yochanan means with the statement Anvat Tanuto Shel Rabbi Zecharia Hechriva et Beitenu v'Sarfat Heichaleinu v'Higlitanu, and this is what Rabbi Zecharia ben Rabbi Yochanan means when he says the anava of Rabbi Zechariah ben Avkulas is what is responsible for the destruction of the temple. So the second flaw, another way to see what was the issue, what did he do that was so wrong? Mesilat Yesharim explains, he refused to look at his future, at the future consequences. You're right, it could be a very noble act again to see, we're not going to offer this animal. But he didn't look at what might happen in the future. You know what? What happens if we don't offer this animal? What's going to happen tomorrow? What's going to happen next week? Are there going to be consequences? Is it worth breaking the good relations they had with the government? And it was really his lack of foresight, which, again, seemed to be pious, but that's why Rabbi Zechariah is attributed with the destruction of the temple. So far we've seen two actions, two ways to explain what his problem was. Maybe he overvalued the temple and the holy utensils at the expense of I'd say human life. And the other one here is lack of foresight. He didn't look to see what the consequences would be. Yes. Okay, I have another. I'm going to offer another explanation, which maybe will give some sort of an answer, I hope, to your question. And it will hinge upon the fact that, again, I started off by saying, who here knows Rabbi Zechariah ben Apkulas? He doesn't seem to be all important, but there's a school of thought that thinks he was really this tremendous leader. So it could be, if he really was this tremendous leader, we're going to put the blame on him because he should have been the leader. He should have acted with more insight. And maybe the Kohanim didn't want to argue with him for that reason. They said, you know what, if he is our leader, we're going to look to him for guidance. We don't agree with him, but we're going to look to him for guidance. But correct, I think certainly you should say maybe they should have been stronger in their opinion and tried to reason with him to offer the Korban. I agree. Yes. That's true. I don't want to. I mean, I'm not exactly sure what you're referring to, but again, I'm going to base everything here on the fact that it's not me saying blaming Rabbi Zechariah ben Apkulas. It's Rabbi Yochanan here, and it's Rabbi Yossi, these great leaders who maybe were alive at the time, maybe not. But if they believe that he should have had this different insight at the time, you're right. Obviously, looking backwards, we could have said, "What were you thinking?" But I think once Rabbi Yochanan's putting the blame on him, it seems to be. He seems to be of the opinion that even at that time, Rabbi Zechariah ben Apkulas should have had the insight to act appropriately. So maybe one other interpretation based on his actions in this Gemara is the Gra, Rabbi Eliyahu, the Gaon from Vilna. And he offers interpretation, trying to go back, again, we said, what is the Anava? It doesn't seem to be very humble here. He's going against all the rabbis. So the way the Gra explains is that he says, Rabbi Zechariah ben Apkulas was, let's call him the God of the door. He was the most important people, the most important person, most important leader of the nation. And there's a principle, which he says, referring to the, in court, that if you have however many judges on the court, you have to begin always with the lowest level, the least important judge, the least important sage maybe, and move upwards. And the reason is because if the person who is the most important speaks first, who's going to want to argue with his opinion? If the leader, the most important, the most learned of the group says X, who's going to want to argue with him and say Y? And the Gra explains that was the problem with Rabbi Zechariah ben Apkulas. And the other opinions we saw until now, they seem to be accusing. They don't see Rabbi Yochanan's statement as being praiseworthy at all. I think the Gra is taking an approach where he sees Rabbi Zechariah ben Apkulas being somewhat praiseworthy. Again, obviously with flaws in it. But his humility was that Rabbi Zechariah ben Apkulas should have spoken last. He should have made sure to let everybody else speak, let everyone else give their opinion. And then, therefore, if he saw maybe that 20 other people who were there would have argued and said better to offer it, even if he said, you know what, let's not offer it, if the 20 rabbis already stated their opinion, he could have been outvoted. Right, I agree. It seems to be a hard read of the Gemara because it begins Savur Rabbanan Likrove. Right, the text begins the rabbis wanted to, and he got up and argued. So I would agree with you that it doesn't seem to fit the reading of the text that we have. But nevertheless, that's the opinion that he offers. And those are some of the lessons we can learn from Rabbi Zachariah ben Afkulas and his role, as we see in the story in Gittin. But if we look now in source number four is the version of the story as it appears in Eicha Rabbah. And it's going to be very similar. I'm going to read through it quickly because we're familiar with the story, but we're going to see one very significant change in the story, and the significant change is really Reb Zachariah ben Afkulas and his role that he plays in the story. And here again, source number four, there's no English translation, so you can just follow along as I read in the Hebrew. Ma'aseh shahaya be'adam echad b'Yerushalayim she'asa se'uda. There's a man in Yerushalayim again who made a feast. Amar leben beito, lech ve'havi li kamti rachmei. Bring me kamta, my friend. Azal v'ayti lei bar kamta sane. Who do you bring him? Bar kamta. A'al v'yasha bina orchim. He sat among the guests. A'al ashkechei bini aristaya. He saw, the host saw bar kamta sitting among his guests. Amr lo atzanai ve'at yativ bego beitai. You're my enemy. Why are you at my party? Kum poklacha migu beite. Go get out of my house. Amr lo altavai sheni va'ana yahiv lacha demei disudata. Please don't embarrass me, and I'll pay you for my portion. Amr lo leit dat misuba. No, get out of here. Amr le altavai sheni va'ana yativ ve'leit ana achil v'shati. He says, don't embarrass me. Let me sit here. And I'm not even going to eat or drink. It's a bit of a different version of the previous story where he offered to pay more. I'm not going to eat or drink. Let me stay. Amar lo, leit at misuba. Get out of here. Amar le, ana yahib demei kol hadin sudata. I'll pay for the whole meal. Amar le, kum lach. No. And here the bolded part. Who was at this party? We didn't know was at the party in the previous source. Behayasham Rabbi Zachariah ben Afkulas. Rabbi Zachariah ben Afkulas was at the party. The haita safek biadolim chot velo micha. And he thought about standing up, he thought about taking a stand, protesting the actions of the host, velo micha. And he did not protest, he stayed quiet. Not going to read through the rest of the source. The rest of the source, again, goes through the continuation of the story with the animal, etc., etc. In this version of the story, when they offer to bring the animal, when they bring the animal to the Beit HaMikdash, it's not Rabbi Zachariah ben Afkulas who protests. It's another Kohen. We're not given a name. It's somebody else who says, and it's really different reasons for why they don't offer the korban. So and let's just conclude to the last line of the story, where again is bolded, the last line of the source. Amar Rabbi Yossi, again, here's Rabbi Yossi instead of Rabbi Yochanan. The humility of Rabbi Zachariah ben Afkulas is what is responsible for the burning of the temple. I'll leave it to the scholars to decide which story is more accurate. Happens to be that they're not necessarily in contradiction. It could be that he was present at the party and he was the one later on. That's not really what's important to me. What I want to focus more on is his role in this story and what lessons we can learn, and again, why the Midrash in Eicha Rabbah too attributes the destruction, the burning of the temple, to Rabbi Zachariah ben Afkulas. First of all, going to the last line, I think Anava here can fit in better than it did in the other story. And what's the reason? Imagine what's going through Rabbi Zachariah ben Afkulas' head. I read a part of the book by Benny Laub in Sefer Chachamim, and he talks about how the leaders of the generation, it was almost a corrupt society, and how the leaders and the sages of the generation were very much influenced by the wealthy members, the elite of society. So you can imagine what's going through Rabbi Zachariah ben Afkulas' head. He's at this party. He sees this injustice going on. He sees the host embarrassing Bar Kamtza, in front of everybody at the party, and you can imagine who's at this party. We know the leaders, the sage of the generation are at the party. You can imagine all the wealthy people of Yerushalayim of the generation are at the party. And what's Rabbi Zechariah ben Apkula thinking? He sees this injustice, and he wants to get up. And he stands up from his chair, and you can see he's about to go over, about to run over, break up the fight, maybe make peace. And then he looks to his left, and who does he see? He sees all the other leaders of the Jewish community, all the other chachamim, doing nothing. They're just sitting there, minding their own business. If Rabbi Zechariah ben Apkula's heard, you can imagine that everybody else heard as well. And based on our source in the other story, in the Gemara in Gittin, Bar Kamtza says, what was the reason he went to the Roman government? Because he saw the leaders of the generation saw what happened, and they didn't do anything, and he thought they four agreed. And Rabbi Zechariah ben Apkula is stuck, right? Hayta safek biyado limchot. He had a doubt. Maybe I should go protest. You know what? Maybe I should leave behind everyone I'm with, and I should go take a stand, and I should go make shalom. But at the end of the day, v'lo micha. He didn't protest. And one reason why anava can fit in better, if you want to take, again, Rabbi Zechariah ben Apkula is the only one here who at least had a hava mina. He's the only one who thought about breaking up the fight. Nobody else seemed to even care. Everybody else was minding their own business. But if you want to take somewhat of a better approach, a higher approach for Zechariah ben Apkula, why did he not protest? Again, maybe he thought himself as a nobody. He was anav. You're right, I want to protest, I want to go ahead and break up the fight. But if all these other great leaders aren't doing it, maybe they believe that it should be taking place. Maybe they, for some reason, they don't see an injustice taking place. And his anava, his humility was, he thought he's a nobody. How can he, when everybody else is sitting quiet, everybody else isn't doing anything, how could he be the one to get up and be the one to take the stand? And again, it's, even though it was might have been a humble act, it might have been a noble act, Rabbi Yossi, again, attributes, blames Rabbi Zechariah ben Apkula's humility with the destruction of the temple. And I think based on this source, it can work really with the source in Eicha, maybe the Gemara as well. I want to go to source number 6. And that, as I said, is the Tosefta. The Tosefta, in Shabbat, a rabbinic source, a collection of rabbinic statements, again, at the time period, Tosefta is around the time period of the Mishnah. And this is the only other place in all of Shas, the only other place in all of Gemara, really all of rabbinic literature, where we see Rabbi Zechariah ben Apkula. What's the case? Source number 6. Beit Hillel Omri Magbihim Me'ala Shulchan Atzamoru Klipin. If you're eating your meal on Shabbos, and you have some sort of peels or bones that remain after you finish eating, so the bones, the peels, serve no purpose. Muktza, you're not supposed to remove anything on Shabbos which serves no purpose. So Beit Hillel says, you know what? It's permitted. You're allowed to take these bones. You're allowed to take these shells, throw them out, for whatever rationale, whatever halachic rationale he believes. That's Beit Hillel. Beit Shammai Omrim, Misalekat HaTavla Kulam Nara. He doesn't think you can pick up the actual shells. He says, you know what you should do? You should take the whole table, because the table itself is a muktzah, and you can take the whole table, shake off the peels, shake off the bones, and you're good. Zechariah ben Apkilas lo haya noheg lo kedivrei Beit Shammai velo kedivrei Beit Hillel. But Zechariah ben Apkilas, he didn't want to get into any issues. He didn't want to rely on Beit Hillel. He didn't act like Beit Hillel. He didn't want to rely on Beit Shammai. He wanted to go a step beyond. So what did he do? Ela notelu mashlich lachar hamita. He didn't want to get himself into this issue in the first place. He didn't want to have the bones on his table to begin with. So you know what he did? He was eating the chicken, the polka off the bone. As soon as he finished, he didn't put it on his table. He threw it behind him. He made sure that there was no pile. He wasn't concerned. He didn't want to get himself involved in this argument between Beit Hillel and Beit Shammai. And here, how do we conclude? Amar Rabbi Yossi. Anvatanuto she Rabbi Zechariah ben Apkila si sarfa et ha'ichal. Again, the humility or the anava of Rabbi Zechariah ben Apkula is the reason why the temple was burned. What in the world is this statement doing in this Gemara? Or this Tosefta? And I think there are two approaches we can take. One approach is that, again, we mentioned that Zechariah ben Apkula doesn't appear anywhere else. And since he's not talked about very much, maybe you have the Tosefta here, and we'll just tell you, oh, you should know who's this Zechariah ben Apkula. he's responsible for the destruction of the temple. Maybe you should go, hinting at the story in the Midrash or in Gittin, go read the Gemara over there. Maybe that's one approach. But I think many of the commentators here in source number 7, I brought Tosefta Kipshuta, Rav Shaul Lieberman, on his work on the Tosefta. And he writes here, you know why this statement is included here? Because this is who Rabbi Zechariah ben Apkulas is. V'kan ha-kavana, Rabbi Zechariah ben Apkulas, in source number 7, nimna mila hachriya ben Beit Shammai ben Beit Hillel. He didn't want to act like either of them. He didn't want to say Beit Hillel's right. He didn't want to say Beit Shammai's right. Lo ratza lo lahagbiya tatzamot, v'lo lena'er tatavla. He didn't want to pick up the bones themselves. He didn't want to take up the table and spill everything. Ulefichach, hivriach et atzmo mehanachat ha'atzamot ala tavla. Therefore, he made sure to not put the bones on the table in the first place. Kidei shelo yavo lidei ma'aseh klal. He can make sure that he doesn't get involved. Ve'anvatanuto zot, and this type of humility, haita shitatit etzlo. This was who he is. This defined who Zechariah ben Apkulas was. Ve'nahag ba af b'ma'asim achirim. And this is how he acted in other places. Now, where are other places? Other places is certainly our story. And I think the reason why Rabbi Yossi, again, they bring down this statement of attributing the destruction to Rabbi Zechariah ben Apkulas in the Gemara, in the Tosefta, again, which seemingly is unrelated, is because, again, pointing the blame, who is Rabbi Zechariah ben Apkulas? He was a leader, but he's a leader who's afraid to take a stand. Right, he was the one. Previous story, Safik v'yadol limchot. He was up there. He wanted to protest, v'lo micha, but he couldn't bring himself to do it. He was too scared to take a courageous stand against the other chachamim. And here too, as well, in the Gemara, and again with respect to Mukta, Beit Hillel, Beit Shammai. These are two, right? Many. They appear all over the Gemara. Well-respected opinions. And still, there, Rabbi Zechariah ben Apkulas says, "I don't want to offend anyone. You know, I don't want to take a stand. I don't want to be a Beit Hillel guy. I don't want to be a Beit Shammai guy. I want to almost." Here he's saying, "I don't want to be like anyone," and therefore he makes sure to avoid the situation altogether. But he doesn't see himself worthy again of taking a stand. Who am I to be like Beit Hillel? Who am I to be like Beit Shammai? Better not to get involved in this situation. And therefore, Rav Lieberman here says the reason why that line is quoted here is because it is relevant to the story. Because the problem with Rav Zechariah ben Apkulas, even though he was a leader of the Jewish people, you can't have a leader who is afraid to take a stand. And due to his actions, or I'll say really his inactions in the story, that is why the temple was destroyed. Yes. Okay, great. I agree, and I think that's a very good point. Thank you. Okay. Okay, right, and again, I think this, I agree, and I think this, again, goes back to the ambiguity in the word of anava. What is the anava here? Is he being humble? Is he not? That's the struggle. I could say we're all right. There's certainly different ways to read the story, and I think both approaches would ultimately make sense. So just to conclude, we saw different ways, different flaws. Okay, sorry. Interesting. Okay, I didn't realize that before. That's certainly a different way. The suggestion here, maybe it's correct, is that it's sipek biado doesn't mean not safek a doubt, but sipek means the ability. So maybe it's putting the blame on Rabbi Zachar ben Avkulah that he had the ability to do so, and he chose not to. So he didn't even have a havamina to do so. You're saying he was sitting there, but they're putting the blame on him because he was maybe the most important one there. Okay, I didn't read it like that, but I agree. That's certainly one way to read it. So just to conclude, we talked about different ways putting the blame on Rabbi Zachar ben Avkulas. Was it putting too much emphasis on the temple without looking at how it affects human life, his lack of foresight, his lack of ability to take a stand? They all are part of one approach, I think, which I mentioned in the beginning, is that it's shifting the blame almost, or sharing the blame, I want to say, between the people and the leaders. Again, the story began akamta ubar kamta. So those seem to be, we don't even know who kamta is. It doesn't even come in the story. But bar kamta, we blame it on people, the members of society. Maybe that's symbolic of the Jewish people, that the Jewish people themselves, again, they didn't get along. That was the reason for the destruction. But when Rabbi Yochanan and Rabbi Yossi, when they come along, they're sharing the blame. They're saying, it could be, you're right, the Jewish people certainly were not proper. But now he's putting the blame on Rabbi Zachar ben Avkulas. He's putting it on the leaders. And it's the responsibility of the leaders to make sure that their people are acting in the proper way. And if you're having leaders here, again, who aren't breaking up fights, if you have leaders who are taking that stand, who are not, you know, allowing the people, the community to grow, so ultimately they're doomed for failure. If you read keynote this morning, we talked about some of the keynote that dedicated to our leaders, the King Melch Yoshiyahu, the Asara Haruge Malchut. We see that how the destruction of our good leaders, of our righteous leaders, what the void it leaves with the Jewish people. And hopefully we can hope that our leaders in the future will be of that merit, will be the ones who will bring us to act better, to inspire us to reach higher lights, and hopefully bring us to the rebuilding of the next Beit HaMikdash.